This is Desi Collective, and I am Anjana Nagarajan Bhutani with Meera Kaimal. This is part two of our podcast about our diet and its effect on climate change. And today we're talking with Seema Ved and Erin Zimmerman. Let's continue our conversation.
Seema Ved and Erin Zimmerman are climate reality activists from the Bay Area. And in our last episode, we talked about going vegan. Seema and Erin, my question is, how does going vegan save the environment? We know the food we consume leaves behind a carbon footprint. So let's start by looking at how does someone figure out what their carbon footprint is, and how can going vegan offset that?
Wonderful question. And I'll give you a few data points in a minute, but just generally speaking, animal agriculture is detrimental for the planet because there's a lot of water consumption. And we, those of us who live in California, very well understand how precious water is, right? So when we are consuming animal products, a lot more water is going into the production of these products. Secondly, as Erin was mentioning earlier, there's a lot of emissions, methane and nitrous oxide, and all of that is accumulating in the atmosphere and it's trapping the heat, and because of which the temperatures are rising, right? So that's the second. And then the third one, which is a very important factor, is that there's so much deforestation happening across the world. Amazon jungles are being cut to make room for the ranchers, so that the livestock can be, you know, raised on these. So that's a very, very serious consequence, because losing jungles means we are also losing many species of wildlife. So it's all in all a very, very, negative, has a very negative impact on our planet. How does going vegan help? So each day, a vegan saves one animal's life, 1,100 gallons of water, 45 pounds of grain, 20 pounds of carbon dioxide equivalent, and 30 square feet of forested land every single day.
Wow.
So this is so powerful that just by making this transition, you can contribute to saving all of this. And if you are interested in actually calculating your carbon footprint, there's a great site called footprintcalculator.org. It helps you figure out what your carbon footprint is and which are the areas where you can do better.
Seema, the vegan diet is widely regarded to be better for the planet than those that include animal product. But not all plant-based foodstuffs have the same environmental footprint. Avocados, for example, that all of us Californians love, guzzle up huge amounts of water. A single mature tree in California, for example, needs up to 209 liters or 46 gallons every day in the summer, more than would fill a large bathtub. It is a staggering amount in the dry summer months in water-stressed regions in areas like California, Chile, Mexico, and southern Spain, where many commercial avocado crops are grown, and puts a huge pressure on the local environment. What do you say to folks who bring up these and other statistics to counter a vegan diet?
That's a very valid point. And I think the example that you've given of avocados is very true, and same goes for the almonds. However, I will still say that meat or any animal product like dairy consumes 40 times more water, more resources than the worst plant-based product. So that's one. Secondly, what I would like to say is that, yes, we need to be conscious. If there are better alternatives, we need to go for those. So for example, I'm consciously trying to reduce my consumption of almond milk and adopt more of like oat milk or milks that are less, require less water and less resources. So even within plant-based diet, we need to be cognizant of and conscious of what our carbon footprint is based on which of these items that we are consuming. Another point that I would like to make is grow your own food as much as possible. I think that is probably the best option, where we know exactly what is going in. The more organic, the more natural our food is, the better it is for the earth as well as for us.
Talking about the carbon footprint again, those of us on an Indian diet, you know, rely on our desi grocery stores for the grains and the veggies, and most or many of these products are sourced from India. How does that square up with being vegan when having to look at the carbon footprint of transporting food from India so that we can stick to a vegan diet? How does that square up?
Yeah, that's actually a challenge that I honestly haven't been able to address yet. I am trying to consume more of locally grown, for example, rice and like chickpeas, you know, don't need to necessarily get it from the Indian store, which has been shipped all the way here. So there are some ingredients at least that we can get from any grocery store. So we should try, and I'm making a conscious effort also to buy local as much as possible. When it comes to our spices, which obviously we can't do without, I mean, there's no way you can cook Indian food without these spices. I have been looking for local sources, but I haven't come across any. So there are things like cinnamon and, you know, these kind of common spices that we use in Western and Indian cooking that you can get locally. But when it comes to our like garam masala and our curry powders and, you know, those kind of things, those are being shipped from India. And I hope somebody who's listening, a savvy entrepreneur, this is a great idea that you can kind of come up with a way to produce these spices here in California. I mean, with all the wonderful weather that we have, right? And maybe in other parts of the US as well, there would be a huge market for it, especially if, you know, people realize that shipping these Indian spices and products is enhancing our carbon footprint to a great extent.
Mm-hmm. You know, I suppose if you can grow French wine in India, you can grow Indian masala in the Napa Valley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, and Simi, you had a really good point about growing your own food here, because we're really lucky in Northern California, and most of California, that you can grow food all year round. And even like I live in an apartment and I don't have the option to grow my own food, but there is a farmer's market every Saturday all year round. And so not only can I make sure that what I get is local, as most things in the farmer's market are, they're usually organic, and they don't have a big carbon footprint because they have not been shipped from very far away. Most of them are just within driving distance. And so that's, if people are concerned, I think, about, you know, checking where the product comes from at a grocery store, if you go to a farmer's market, you're pretty much guaranteed that your carbon footprint will be lower, the food will be healthier. It doesn't solve the spice problem, but at least it takes a little bit of the extra thought out, so you're not checking the back of the package or whatnot when you're at the grocery store and stocking up on that stuff that way. But I totally agree that there's just certain things that we haven't come up with as solutions for yet. Mm-hmm.
This question is for both of you. In your opinion, why do you think people are so resistant to considering a vegan lifestyle?
I'll go first. This is something that I kind of deal with pretty frequently. There is a resistance with many people to even listening about, you know, why being vegan is better and all that. And I think some of this has to do with very ingrained kind of, you know, conceptions and kind of myths that, oh, ghee is really good for you, and, you know, milk is really good for you, and there is no substitute whatsoever. So one of this, I think change in any case, people are resistant to change in general. And when it comes to food habits, I think it's so much more difficult for some people, and they would rather not hear about it than be faced with this reality that my personal choice is impacting the entire planet, is impacting not just my children, but my future generations, right? The third point I think is people just don't like to be told that, hey, what I'm doing is better and what you are doing, you could do better. So sometimes it's that. But I'm happy to say that people are more open-minded in general. And the fact that fast food joints like Carl's Jr., like a KFC, they are including plant-based options in their menu is indicative of the fact that it is going mainstream and people are open to trying plant-based options.
And I'm going to build on that. I think there's two reasons that people are really resistant to making a change. And I study politics, and so I sort of look at it from that way. And as Seema mentioned, dairy products and consuming dairy products are very much part of culture. And when you start questioning the consumption of dairy products, it's not only just a rejection of a certain type of food, but I think it can be seen as like an attack on their culture and an attack on, you know, what people value in their memories of childhood. And people don't want to hear that something that they hold precious is intentionally or not harmful. And I think it's also a cognitive disconnect. And we get cognitive disconnect when our behavior doesn't meet our values. And as soon as people realize that their actions have these really negative environmental consequences, then every time they repeat these actions, like they get that discomfort. It's like an internalized discomfort where you realize that I'm not living up to my expectations for myself. And it's uncomfortable, and people really don't like to be in that. We've all been in that situation, and it's really uncomfortable. So I think that that's the reason that people prefer to just either not hear about it or they're denialists of it, because as Seema was saying, change is hard, especially that internal change where you have to reconcile those differences in yourself. And I think that that's two of the main reasons where people are, you know, they seem to react so very strongly to what would be seen as a relatively minor change or a behavioral change. And it's a personal choice. And I think that that's why people sort of feel either attacked or persecuted when you bring up this topic.
The last question that we always like to end with, a little bit of an action item for us. What do you think our listeners should take away from our conversation? What simple suggestions do you have for all of us to help us eat more mindfully and reduce our carbon footprint?
My suggestion is take baby steps. Don't get overwhelmed by doing it all at once. And that's what I did too. Take it as a challenge, you know, 1 week try non-dairy milk, you know, maybe a couple of different types and see which one you like. Try tofu, substitute non-dairy butter with your dairy butter. So making these changes gradually really helps. And don't be too hard on yourself if you slip up, because it is going to take time. And I think every individual has a different journey, but feel proud of your small victories. Because remember, based on what we talked about, like the carbon footprint, every item that you're substituting where you are consuming a plant-based item instead of an animal-based item, you're actually directly impacting your environment and also yourself. So that's one suggestion. Second, I would highly recommend that you join some community groups. I mentioned Vegan Outreach because I have volunteered with them. They actually even pair you up with a mentor who can guide you, who can help you. They also have a program called 10 Weeks to Vegan. So you can enroll in that. And again, they have great recipes and ideas, and there's a whole support system. And believe me, having that really helps. There are Facebook groups that you can join. And also, if you want to learn more about it, then there are many documentaries that you can watch. Cowspiracy being one. From the health point of view, What the Health is a great one. And from an animal cruelty perspective, it's Earthlings or Dominion. So These are some of the things you can do, and it'll just make you more motivated and inspire you to continue on this path. So those are some of my suggestions.
I think those are great suggestions. And I also would encourage people to not look at it as giving something up, but as trying something new. So it's not losing ingredients, it's adding ingredients. So many people sort of look at addressing lifestyle changes and diet changes, and certainly climate change, is this like, we have to change and therefore change is hard. And it's going to be a struggle. It's going to hurt. I'm not going to enjoy this. Whereas, you know, an improvement in the way you feel, an improvement in your health, an improvement in your relationship with nature, those are all very, very good things. And so I sort of feel like you're not giving something up, you're growing into something else. And I think that that's a better way to have a relationship with this transition. Same with climate. When people think we're going to have to make all of these changes to address climate change, that's exciting. That's an opportunity for innovation. That's something that we should all be running towards, because we won't get another option like this or an opportunity like this for the rest of our lives. And so I think people should look at it and approach it with a sense of enthusiasm. As something that you want to do, not something you have to do, because we have to recognize that the only person's actions we can control are our own. And we need to own that. But when you do own that, it can be a really great journey.
That's an important point. Going vegan or reducing your carbon footprint doesn't mean you're losing your lifestyle or giving it up, when in fact, we're actually gaining a better relationship with our health, with nature, and especially with the environmental legacy we leave behind for future generations. Thanks for coming by to share those ideas with us, Seema and Erin. I'm Meera Kaimo with Anjana Nagarajan Bhutani, and this is Desi Collective. Tune in to our next episode of Our Climate is Changing, Why Aren't We? To hear what high school student and climate activist Kaushik Tota has to say about climate change and his future.